broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
No more! Drug war!
Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. We invite you to join us as we examine the unvarnished truth about the drug war.
Good evening and welcome to Cultural Baggage. Our guests for tonight will include Paul Wright, the editor of Prison Legal News, Robert Rapopelian of Parents and Educators for Ending the Drug War, and Bill Hildebrandt of Parents Against Prohibition. And I want to first take a moment to thank the editors of the Houston Press for naming Cultural Baggage the best FM talk show on the air here in Houston. I appreciate that very much. I think we do have Paul Wright online. Let's, no, they're telling me we need a second. Well, anyway, I think it's important that people recognize there is a change. Despite the government machinations, despite their attempts to, you know, for instance, say marijuana is now the most dangerous drug there is, twice as dangerous as heroin and cocaine, we all know it's just a big sack, and there's no truth to it. Time will make the changes, but more importantly, people will make the changes, and that's where you come in. You hear this truth from me each week. You know the validity of what I'm saying. You know the quality of the guests who bring you this truth. You know there is a need to make a change, and it's my hope that you will do so. You know, in the coming weeks, I'll tell you, we're going to have Preston Pete join us. He's the former editor of High Times magazine. He's written a new book, which kind of encapsulates what many people think about the drug war, what experiences they've had, and so forth. And we'll also be hearing from Paul Krasner. He's the editor of another new book I just got in the mail here. It's called Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, From Toad Slime to Ecstasy. And I've read about 25 pages, and it's really wonderful stuff. And I know that we'll enjoy our visit with him. Oh, give me one second here. Okay. Very good. I'm told that we're changing the order here. So we're not going to have Paul Wright online. We do have Bill Hildebrandt and Robert Rapopelian with us. All right, gentlemen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, welcome. Let's go first with Bill. Introduce yourself and tell us about your organization.
Well, my name is Bill Hildebrandt. I'm a father of five kids, aged 2 to 9. So family is sort of important to me. Our organization, Parents Ending Prohibition, is designed to focus on what we as parents can do to end marijuana prohibition in our country. For me, it started off, you know, I tried to raise my kids in a safe and healthy environment. I looked at risks and benefits as far as their actions, what I needed to do. And at the same time, I watched the government pushing the war on drugs, and it just sort of didn't add up. The artificial risks created by the government were far greater than anything, any of the risks that naturally occurring risks from cannabis misuse, and their solution was to keep on pushing the risks and pushing their risks and creating greater punitive measures. One of the other things for me was watching the additional problems of prohibition as far as just a deregulated system, whereas for other substances, say tobacco use, they've been able to create a decline in teen tobacco use by regulating it more and approaching it from that aspect. With cannabis, the government sort of, through prohibition, ignores their ability to regulate it and allows the system to sort of flourish in an unproductive manner. A third aspect that was very important for my wife and I was just the hypocrisy in the way the government approached marijuana and cannabis prohibition.
Thank you, Bill. Robert, tell us about your organization, please.
Sure. I head up an organization called PIRTLE, which is Parents and Educators for the Reform of Drug Laws. I've been studying the drug laws and the drug culture for something like 20 years now. And it's been inevitable to come to the conclusion that the drug war itself is not functional. And so I formed PIRTLE with three goals in mind. The first one is to find and collect the information necessary to convince people of the problems with the drug war. And the second is to package that information in a form that's easily understood. And the third, of course, is to find a means of distributing that information to the people in general. We're pretty much of the opinion that the politicians aren't going to do anything unless the people insist on something. And if for the people to insist, they have to be informed. So it's essentially a propaganda war. We have to get the good information to the people faster than the governments and the corporations can get the bad information to them.
Well stated. Part of the reason why I wanted you guys to join us tonight is this is not just doctors and scientists and, politicians. This is people. This is parents. This is people who have a personal stake in this, who are willing to stand up. And I first off, I just want to applaud both of you for what you're doing. I think it's important that the grassroots, the people, take this problem and tackle it together, learn a better way.
Absolutely. If the solution isn't going to come from the people, I really can't say where it would come from.
Right. The politicians can't touch this with a 10-foot pole. They don't want to be seen as soft on crime. It's up to us mm-hmm. to convince them. Am I right?
It's absolutely career suicide for any politician to seriously invoke the concept that the drug war isn't working. Even worse than that, one of the resistances that we've had towards my organization in particular has been that teachers themselves don't want to join the organization for fear of their jobs.
Well, I relay a quick story to you. A friend of mine, we attended an event where the drugs are. John Walters gave a talk, and he dared to stand up, mention that his name and the district he worked in, and said that he had talked to many people, including law enforcement officers, etc., who said that marijuana has not become, this cloned another chromosome. It is still marijuana. And that was basically all he said. But then he was given a hard time by his district, by some of the supervisors, because apparently some person snitched on the fact that he had been to this event and spoken his mind.
Oh, yeah, that's fairly common. And it's not just teachers. It's definitely a case of we have at least three correctional officers and police officers and people who work in that general field who support what we do and have shown up to our meetings, but won't be named and won't actually join the organization for that very reason also.
Well, and it's all too prevalent. It happens all across the nation. There is a stigma that was assigned to this back in the beginnings when it was demonized, and marijuana in particular was said to lead to insanity, criminality, and death. And
absolutely, it's all a superiority issue. You have a case where people on one side believe that they're superior to the people on the other side, and in this case, it's people who don't use drugs and people who do use drugs, and this gives the people on the side of those who don't do drugs the right to persecute and imprison those who do, and by even suggesting that you're not on the side of those people who are going to persecute and imprison the others, that automatically sticks you on the side of those who should be persecuted and imprisoned.
Yep. That's one of the main focuses for our organization, is so often the catchphrase, "for the children," comes out when the government is speaking their mind. For my wife and I, we're sort of taking it a step backwards. We're looking at what is really important for the children and how can we go about creating a system that's going to actually benefit our children, which doesn't necessarily mesh with what the government has to say.
Well, certainly sending daddy away to prison for 10 years is not going to do much to help those children.
Most definitely.
Well, it's even worse than that. We've come into a situation where the drug war itself encourages people to do drugs. By popularizing the drugs and by using reverse psychology don't do this, don't do this. Hey, what is it they're hiding? Also, the way we enforce our laws, the laws are more heavily enforced by requirement for those people who are over 18. The people under 18, they don't have any property to take away. You can't convince them that their friends are narcotics agents, and they have the juvenile court system to protect them from long-term incarceration. They become the easiest method for drugs to move around, and so they become the path of least resistance. Right now, the average age of drug use is around age 18. Once people hit age 18 and go to college, they actually stop doing drugs.
Well, it's a profound situation, isn't it, that we spend $50 billion a year fighting something that just gets worse and worse.
Well, it's really a question of do the people on top, do they actually have this information? Are they ignoring this entirely, or is this something that, for some reason or another, that they don't feel needs to be corrected?
I see it more as a belief system, just something that's been set in place, and those who dare to challenge it, as you say, are vilified.
Absolutely. So what we need to do, as has occurred with the medical marijuana, is to get traction by passing the good information to the people and slowly start convincing them that maybe they have been doing wrong by pursuing this. And if we can get traction, then the stigma will ease off and people will be less in fear of coming out for this.
Right, and that's the whole point, I think, because the evidence is, you know, quite sufficient to make the change. There is still not one death from marijuana. No one even gets sick from it, you know. I mean, it's a sham.
Well, drugs in general have all been vilified, and the very concept that you can prevent people from doing something enjoyable just by making it illegal is intrinsically flawed. It's been demonstrated to be impossible and incorrect and throughout history. If you want to make somebody extremely rich, then illegalize something and make a market for it.
Correct.
Well, let me ask you this, gentlemen. If you would, first with Bill, tell folks where they might learn more about your organization on the net.
For us, go to www.parentsendingprohibition.org, and that'll get to our website. We have a pretty good description of where we stand, some basic facts to support our issue, and some actions that people can take to join with us and help our cause.
All right, and Robert, if you would.
Well, our website is www.perdl.com, PERDL.com, and we have our inaugural presentation, which hopefully has lots of educational information for people, and contact information for where they can get involved.
All right. Let's back up just a minute. What was the impetus? What was the reason for you to begin this organization? What was the straw that broke the camel's back? You first, Bill.
For myself, there were a couple of different things. Again, it was just having kids and trying to raise them in a conscious and intelligent manner. And also watching the government through their pushing the war on drugs. I think part of it would be seeing the DARE program espousing a zero tolerance policy, trying to theoretically keep kids from substance abuse, turning into something where kids would be turning in their parents for any kind of drug use their parents had, just being used as an extension of law enforcement to arrest parents. And that's sort of just a hypocrisy and totally counterproductive actions sort of spurred me to think about doing this. For my wife, it was pretty much a matter of trying to get the message across to other parents. Instead of being marginalized and demonized, the fact that we're just nice, normal parents, we want to raise our kids the same way all other parents do, and there are better ways to do this. There are better ways to prevent substance abuse. There are better ways to deal with the situation than the way that we're doing that.
All right, and Robert, if you would.
Well, for me, it was a series of events. It started when I was 12, actually, and my older brother got caught selling in the smoking area of school. And the whole concept that people can smoke one thing and not another started rolling in my brain and caused me to do research. And then I watched its effects on people that I knew, decent human beings, get arrested and fined and imprisoned for things that didn't make sense in terms of it being a bad thing. And as I dug deeper, the more I learned about it, the more I realized that this was an immense atrocity that affected our society all the way down to its roots in so many ways that it couldn't be counted. Pirtle was formed when I finally realized that it was having a counterproductive effect on a lot of the things that it was supposed to actually be improving, specifically the one where it pushes drugs into schools instead of keeping drugs out of schools. That was the final straw. That was the point at which I realized that if people really knew what was going on, if people had an actual understanding of this, there's no way they would let it continue.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you what, we're going to take our midpoint break. I want you all to hang with us. When we come back, I kind of want to hear a local story, what it's like in your vicinity. I call this the city of Houston the gulag city of planet Earth. But let's talk about drug policy in your locale.
Roundup. Now with Cosmoflux. Responsible for the destruction of 30% of the Amazonian rainforest, more than 1 million Colombian refugees, and millions in profits for Monsanto Laboratories.
Hi, this is Valerie Corral, and I'm the director of the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, WAM, in Santa Cruz, California. Please support our Constitution and free speech through the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio.
Visit the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org. It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Nausea, heartburn, development of bleeding ulcers, vomiting, swelling of the brain, extensive liver damage, difficulty with mental functioning, Reyes syndrome, and death. Time's up. The answer, aspirin. Another FDA-approved product.
I hope you all were able to guess that drug. That was an obvious one. Reyes syndrome. Yes, yes. Gentlemen, if you will, let's talk about what it's like in your locale. Is it Robert? You're in Colorado?
Yeah, I'm in Denver.
And you guys have a new medical marijuana law. How is that working out? And tell us about it.
Well, okay, the medical marijuana law was passed a few years ago, and they've had the opportunity to actually put it into function. Essentially, doctors write a prescription for marijuana. It's not your standard thing you can take to a pharmacy, but we do have an agency that you could bring it to, and then that agency issues you a card which allows you to carry, I think it's like 4 ounces and grow up to 6 plants for your own needs. We've had 2 major issues, and those are our governor and our attorney general, both of which have absolutely insisted that anybody who does this will have the wrath of the federal government come down upon them. Numerous people of that in that group have had their property taken away, have had their marijuana confiscated. Usually, almost invariably, they get the property back, but sometimes the police, just to be mean, does things like cut the electrical cords on their lights. There's currently a court case pending where the police returned only a third of the marijuana that was confiscated. That one's definitely going to be causing a stir sometime soon. But essentially, we already have deregulated marijuana here, or decriminalized, for less than an ounce. It's a $100 fine. We really can't go a whole lot further. As far as the organizational culture around here, we're stuck between religious extremists down in Colorado Springs and a college town, essentially, up in Boulder. And Boulder has some of the most interesting laws on the planet, I swear. And so we get a very, very broad selection of people who want to reform things. But what we've run up against is that since the state's laws themselves are so lax, that it's difficult to get people in on the act, get give people a reason to want to actually do something, because we've run up against the wall of the federal government. We can't really do much locally, so if we have to do anything, it has to be federally.
All right, all right. Bill, tell us about your... Where are you located?
Currently, I live in Oregon. Our situation's a little bit more complicated. We started our organization in Maryland. My wife's a medical marijuana patient, so we worked to change the laws in Maryland, which became more favorable, but still the threat of a police raid or arrest was still something we didn't want to deal with and something that existed there. So we moved 3 months ago, packed up our entire family, moved across the coast to Oregon, where my wife could be a patient in a more functional setting. Oregon's laws are pretty good. They work pretty well without having any major problems, as far as I've heard, for law enforcement and communities. Currently, there's a new ballot proposal on the books for November. It's Measure 33, which would expand the current medical marijuana laws in Oregon to make medicine more available to patients, make increase patients' access to higher quality medicine, and overall provide more of a beneficial situation for patients. I think, and there's little opposition here. What there is sort of focuses on aspects of the law that people don't quite understand, which are pretty easily answered questions. Overall, the new revised medical marijuana plan would be much more beneficial to patients without causing any more problems for the communities. So sort of work in favor of that.
All right. One last thing I want to discuss with you guys. If you had the ear of the key person, the legislator, or whoever, the man who's most trusted in this regard, what would you tell them? Not just about marijuana, but what you've seen about the drug war and what changes you think should be made?
Well, I'd pretty much start with the Holy Trinity of drug reform, and that's that the drug war isn't doing any of its functions, that the side effects are horrendous, and that in important key points, it's actually counterproductive. I do tend to want to suggest to people a form that would actually fix these problems, where each drug would have a agency that kept track of the damages that it causes. Cancer for smoking, drunk driver killing, addiction programs for heroin, and then each drug would be taxed specifically for the purpose of paying for its own damages. Make people be responsible for their own actions up front and at the purchasing counter.
All right, and Bill?
I would pretty much want to point out that prohibition of alcohol failed for a reason. It missed a point. It introduced a horribly unregulated system and incredible hypocrisy from the government. What we need to do is focus on realistic solutions to substance abuse, proper education, realistic education, common sense education, and workable treatment programs for actual cases of abuse, instead of sort of labeling everything abuse and throwing as many people in jail as possible. It's just failed us for decades now, and they need to come up with a different approach.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us today on Cultural Baggage. As I said, I appreciate the work you're doing. I appreciate your courage and your resolve, and I wish you well.
Thanks for talking to us. Have a good day.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Okay, my friends, the election season is upon us. You know that. I hope that you're registered to vote. We've got a couple of days left where you can still register, and I hope you would do so. You know, make sure your friends are registered, too. Find out who's on your ballot for reform, who's against it, and use that vote to help end this drug war. And be sure, when Election Day comes around, buddy up, spend time in line together with your friends, and make a difference. And as I always say, it's necessary that you write your congressman, your state and federal congressman, your governor, your mayor, other elected officials, and perhaps more importantly, write to the editors of your local paper. If you'd like to learn more about what should be in that letter, I invite you to visit mapinc.org, and that's spelled MAPINC.ORG. And you can get help on, you know, how to put that letter together where you can speak knowledgeably and ask for a reform, a change that you think is necessary to this drug war. I want to also make note of this morning. We had a special program. We called it Take Heed of the Dream, and we were talking about this crazy drug war. I had some experts from across the country, coast to coast and out of Canada. We had Marsha Rosenbaum of the Drug Policy Alliance, Deborah Small of the Breaking the Chains organization, Bruce Merkin of the Marijuana Policy Project, Philippe Lucas of the Vancouver Island Compassion Club, Debbie and Lorraine Jeffries, authors of Jeffries' Journey, Judy Appel of the Drug Policy Alliance, and Catherine Austin Fitz of Solari.com. And the reason why I point this out is this show will be on my website tomorrow at drugtruth.net, and I urge you to listen in. It's important that you fortify yourself, that you get enough information in hand to talk about this around the water cooler, across the back fence, waiting in line at the grocery store, because you'll be surprised how many people will agree with you. They say that 70, 80, up to 85% of Americans are for ending the war on medical marijuana users. And it's rather an insane policy when the vast majority of people want this change, and yet they're afraid to talk about it. That's why I urge you to educate yourself, to fortify yourself, to get ready to talk about it, because this change can happen, if not overnight, certainly quickly. And a lot of it will depend on you feeling comfortable in talking about it and knowing that it is ignorance and superstition and greed that runs this drug war. And therefore, I encourage you to do so. Also, on my website, you can read Drug Truth, Abramson Tazis, and this contains about 42 voices of reformers, judges, scientists, doctors, lawyers, the same people who visit this program. But there it's in written form. You can quote it, you can use it, you can educate yourself, and I urge you to please do so. One other thing I want to make note, a new program note, we do have transcripts being written for all our programs now, and you can also access them there online as well. I don't know, my friends. I think it's necessary that you don't just listen to me, that you do something with this. Because I meet people, I meet them at the pool hall, the grocery store, wherever. People tell me, yeah, you're doing the right thing. You're, making a difference. And I am. I'm making a small difference. I'm educating you. But the real difference will come from you and your desire and your willingness and your effort to create a little letter, 50 words long, that's all it's got to be, and send it to your congressman, send it to the paper, and carry it with you. That's your soundbite. That's what you can use to help end this drug war by educating your friends at the cooler and the grocery store line. It's up to you to make that difference, and I urge you to decide that you want to make that difference because you know the truth. Don't be afraid. Just dare to step up and do it, because I do this every day. I spit in the drug czar's eye every day of the week, and I'm still standing. You can do it, my friends. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I must remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.